Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Today on the show, we're talking about how people make places better. And we have two guests for you to talk about Human Powered. It's a new podcast from Wisconsin Humanities. One of our guests is Dina Wurzel. She's an executive producer of the project. She's also the executive director of Wisconsin Humanities. And Dina, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for inviting me.
Well, it's great to have you here. Tim Hunt also with us. He's a longtime journalist in Vernon County. He's also currently serving as a congressional aide to Representative Ron Kind. And Tim, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Larry.
Great that you're here as well. As we talk with these two folks, we're going to learn about the project and how the Driftless Region floods are kind of a good example of folks coming together to save this unique area in our state. So as we talk with them, I hope you'll join in. How do you think people make places better? Have you been part of a movement to change or improve your community? Are you from the Driftless area? What's your flood story? There are a lot of stories there for sure. I hope you'll join in. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Dina Wurzel, let's start with you. Tell us about the Human Powered Project. How did it come to be?
Well, through Wisconsin Humanities, we are so lucky to meet incredible people and see all kinds of positive things happening in communities because of our grant program. All kinds of people from organizations around the state come to us with their creative ideas, but we've always been frustrated that few people who aren't directly touched by these projects know about them. You know, we knew all these community leaders and humanities scholars, the projects they've created together, that these could be an inspiration and even a model for other people and communities facing similar complex challenges. So a podcast seemed like a really great way to do that kind of sharing, since it's this flexible medium that can make you feel like you've really been right there with somebody. And podcasts can take you right inside a story. So at the same time that we were thinking about the podcast, we'd also just taken over production of the extremely popular digital storytelling project on Facebook, Love Wisconsin, from their founder. So we're already, again, thinking with them about the power of stories and reaching people digitally. So those two things came together, and we're happy that they're actually producing the project with us. And away we've gone with these amazing stories.
They are amazing. I was listening to the podcast that we'll be talking more about today, and it really is. A podcast is really a way to take you right inside a community, in this case.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful. Well, the question, how do people make places together again? Maybe talk a bit more about that.
Yeah, well, one of the things that we do with the humanities, so a lot of people are, you know, our name is Wisconsin Humanities. Everyone knows Wisconsin, but humanities, maybe I need to unpack that just a little bit to help you understand. So humanities and higher education refer to the study of history and culture and anthropology and so forth that explore the human experience. But what we do is public. It's about the humanities in our lives. And so in everything that we do, we're, you know, whether it's through our grants or through our own programs, they're designed to spark people's imaginations and to help Wisconsinites of every conceivable background understand and connect with one another. So, you know, that might be through a museum exhibit on a forgotten piece of Wisconsin history, or an after-school program that offers cultural enrichment opportunities to youth. Or in this case, you know, we wanted to share Stories from the Flood, an incredible story-gathering project that is helping people recover from the 2018 floods through story, which is not necessarily the way that one might think about flooding. But as Carolyn Gottschalk-Druschke, the scholar who worked with the Driftless Writing Center, said, stories give us the equipment for living, and that's what we believe.
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure and believe it. Well, you know, thinking about the project as a whole, I'm sure there were many, many stories to choose from. How'd you pick?
Well, we did try to pick some of what we thought were the most innovative projects that we knew of. We tried to pick projects that came from around the state and touched different people's lives. So, in fact, our first episode, which we released a month ago, features Professor Rijit Sen from UW-Milwaukee, his students, and community members in the Sherman Park and Washington Park neighborhoods, where Professor Sen has been working for years with his students in a very untraditional way. He's a professor of architecture, and we tend to think of architecture as studying buildings. But what he said to his students is, you know, to understand buildings, you have to understand people's lives. And so, without giving the whole story away, because I really hope your listeners will go and listen to it, they have done transformational work together with people like community activist Camille Mays or Sherry Fuqua, where they're taking disused spaces, like vacant lots that appear as unused spaces on city planning maps, and literally making things grow. With gardens, with stalls where farmers markets are now held. They're building real things, but as Arijit says, and Camille and Sherry echo, they're building community, and they're doing that through listening to one another. So that's part of the humanities power of this, that thread that runs through the stories, is that deep listening and caring. That I think the humanities help bring out.
And I hope a lot of people hear it. It is a wonderful episode. And here we've got the Driftless Region episode, which I also thought was very powerful. The title was Stories from the Flood. We've got a clip just to start, and actually it starts the podcast pretty much. Let's take that clip, Christina.
One night in late August of 2018, it started to rain in southwestern Wisconsin. That rain quickly turned into a downpour, and then a flash flood. That's when Clinton Backstead woke up.
The electricity went off at 2:30 in the morning, and the first thing I saw, the only thing I remember about in the house, because I went to the bedroom, which was straight ahead. My good shoes, my Sunday shoes, were floating.
Yeah. Oh, man. Tim Hunt, you grew up in the Driftless. For those unfamiliar, maybe give us a little background on the area.
Yeah, I grew up in LaCrosse County, small dairy farm. Typical 160-acre, 40-cow dairy farm, youngest of 10 kids. So I come at this project from a number of perspectives, having grown up at the very tippy top of the Coon Creek watershed, and then also later covering the area as a journalist. I really appreciate the conservation efforts and what the area meant to the rest of the country until I started to cover it as a journalist. And attended the 75th anniversary of the establishment of the Coon Creek Watershed, which is the original conservation project in the country, in 2008. And then these floods that have happened over about the last 15 years, starting in 2007, we've had what they've called 100 or 500 year floods every 2 years. Which is really what has gotten the attention of a lot of folks on a regional, state, national level. And so that really brought me to this project. And the timing really worked out very well with the Humanities Council funding for the project. And just the story of how the project evolved over time is interesting in itself. But the Humanities Council jumped on board and really got the ball rolling, and as it evolved, it turned into another sort of project altogether. It really started as a way for the Writing Center to help folks write about their experience in the record flood, which was 2018, and they teamed up with an organization called Project Recovery, who had gotten is partially funded through FEMA. And the idea is to go out and help people deal with their experience and access resources and deal with the mental health issue associated with an event like that. And so the Humanities Council coming on board, and what started as a writing project to deal with that, you know, those experiences and that trauma, then evolved into kind of a oral history project. And then it's really accomplished one of the main goals, which was to bring attention to this particular issue, which I think has implications for people in the whole country, really.
Yeah. And Clinton's experience painted quite the picture. Yeah. And those are really, give a sense for how bad these floods were.
Well, the 2018 flood was, it exceeded previous flood levels, which the previous record was set in 2008 in a lot of areas. And then just 10 years later, exceeded that level by 2 or 3 feet in some places. So they're becoming more frequent, more extreme, whether people want to call it climate change or, you know, sometimes a politically loaded term, but everybody in this region knows that something has changed and there's been a dramatic shift, and what are we going to do about that, and how do we deal with that? So what's really great about the Humanities Council funding of this is that, like Nina talked about, you know, my experience being a journalist, I learned early on that covering disasters is really difficult. It's like trying to take a picture of the Grand Canyon. You just can't capture the enormity of it. So my approach has always been to try and take slices of experience and stitch those together and, you know, hopefully paint a picture for people. And that's really what this project did. It went out and gathered those stories individually and cumulatively, they paint a picture, hopefully, for people. And it's not just about devastation. As Dina has talked about, it's about community. It's about that sense of resiliency. And that's the thing that has always astonished me about covering disasters. There is almost always some ray of hope at the end of it. The difficult part is that a lot of these communities in these watersheds now are very, very tired because, like I said, a major flood every 2 or 3 years tends to zap their energy and resources.
Talking today with Dina Wartzel, an executive producer of the project. She's the executive director of Wisconsin Humanities. Tim Hunt, longtime journalist in Vernon County, and we're visiting with them about this wonderful project, Human Powered. It's called The Stories of Wisconsin People and Places. And we're zeroing in a little bit now about one episode from the podcast, Stories from the Flood. And I hope you'll join in with your own thoughts, questions, or comments. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Do you live in that area? Have experience there? Other questions? I hope you'll join in. 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us. The email address is ideas@WPR.org. Jane Rotunda, our producer today, our on-air producer, Natalie Guyette, our engineer, Christina Myshock. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at the Human Powered Project, the story of Wisconsin's people and places, and visiting with Dina Wartzel, an executive producer of the project. She's the executive director of Wisconsin Humanities. And Tim Hunt, longtime journalist in Vernon County, and also played a direct role in the podcast that we've visited a little bit about so far. It's called Stories from the Flood, from the Driftless Region of Wisconsin. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us to ideas@WPR.org. Dina, how did this particular story get to be the second episode?
Well, I think one of the things that really stood out for us about this story is the way in which Caroline Gottschall-Druschke worked together with the Driftless Writing Center and Caroline's students at UW-Madison. Caroline teaches English there, how they worked with the folks in the Driftless region to collect these stories. And as you heard with that wonderful clip that you just shared that's in the episode, these voices are so powerful. And again, you know, the podcast as a medium, we really wanted to take people inside these projects, and sharing voices is a key value of ours. So this was a project that does that so beautifully. But I think also this is a story where it's about a particular event, as Tim said. But what we're also able to do, and what this project did, was place that event in the larger context of Wisconsin history, which, in fact, in the episode, Kurt Miney, a wonderful historian and conservationist, a real gem in Wisconsin. You know, Kurt shares how, you know, this history in the Driftless is part of a larger history of the nation. So we had that opportunity as well with this story. And just really show how this very, you know, these lives and this very special part of Wisconsin has something to teach all of us in Wisconsin and to teach all of us as a nation. And lastly, I'd say it's because, as Tim gestured to, this is also, you know, it is a story about hope. It's about incredibly complex problems. It's a, you know, it's about climate and engineering and geology and, you know, so many things. And yet, in the midst of all of that, and despite, you know, what's happened, there are real reasons for hope, that people are coming together and learning from these stories. And so ultimately, that's what we want to bring people through the podcast, is the opportunity to hear stories from real Wisconsinites tackling incredibly complex problems, doing it in very, very concrete ways, and without, you know, being unrealistic, I would say, still finding hope.
Do you think it's an, maybe I ask you both this, do you think it's an example of stories of the flood, of humans making places better? What do you think, Dina?
Yes, because, this story gestures more towards the possibility for making things better. I can say that in some of the other episodes, the first episode, there are literal, changes that make places better. This, the betterment is about human connection. It's more than it is right now, or in this story at least, about, you know, tangible physical change. But it is about the better that happens when people came together. There was an event, actually, that was part of this project where some of the people who shared their stories actually gathered. And I unfortunately wasn't able to be there. Tim, I think you were probably there, so maybe you could speak to it. But my understanding is that it was an incredibly powerful opportunity for people to share and to start to imagine a future for the Driftless. Because without these stories, this is a point that Carolyn makes, these are the stories that will help us imagine what this place can be, that people, despite being, you know, having their, you know, so much of their community destroyed, people don't want to leave. There is a passion for this region. So how are we going to make a future? And that's, I guess maybe that's my best answer, but I really want to hear what Tim says.
Yeah, I do too. Tim, what do you think?
Yeah, I was at that event, and Dina's exactly right. Somebody said afterwards it was a collective, you know, group therapy session in a way that a lot of people talked about their emotions. Now, when it just starts to rain, people get in their car and drive because they're so afraid of what might be coming. That's how much impact these floods have had. And, and what's great about this project is that, you know, as a journalist, what you try to do a lot of times is sort of string a thread and do things and help people connect dots on what's happening and what can be done. And, you know, it's really difficult to deliver that kind of information in a regular news format. These kind of projects give you that kind of long-form storytelling approach, the longer arc of what's happening, and that's exactly what this has done. And some of the things around this, that, this is not a new phenomenon in a way. Again, I'll refer back to the Coon Creek Watershed Project because we really have a model in that there's a lot of similarities to somewhat of a man-made disaster, ecological disaster, that really, if you look at the history of that, that's where the Natural Resources Conservation Service and the federal government started. And it was right during the Dust Bowl, and the New Deal harnessed the power of the Conservation Corps workers to go out and do these conservation projects in the Coon Creek watershed. And the original project got funding, luckily, because the Dust Bowl hit Washington just about the time they're approving funding for it. So, so we don't have to reinvent the wheel in a way. We do have a model on how things sort of got out of balance, and people were kind of reeling about, okay, this seems overwhelming, and how do we deal with this, and how can we reverse this? So there are some things happening there, or independent but yet linked research projects that are happening in these watersheds, and several of them federally funded, to try and come up with ways of, okay, obviously something has changed. First, we have to find out what changed, and then what can we do about it, and how do we make that happen? And communities here are still anxious that, five dams in two counties were overtopped. In other words, they went over the top of the dam, not through the spillway, and that really got the attention of some federal officials, and that's why they're doing these studies. And, those dams are still not repaired. So these communities are literally sitting ducks here if we have another major weather event. So there is hope. There is, if we look to a model like Coon Creek Watershed in the past, and we duplicate some of that effort, I think there are ways we can help make this better and make people not quite so vulnerable.
Yeah, and as you were saying, just the dams, two examples. They're still recovering. The land and the communities are still recovering. We have a clip that describes the flood aftermath, and I think that might be worth listening to. Christina, have you got that up?
I think folks who haven't experienced floods think about them maybe as a one-day event or two-day or 1 week, and really, two and a half years later now, people are still cleaning things out, rebuilding things, tearing things down, dealing with soaked insulation and carpets and basements and all kinds of things. So it's really, I think floods appear in the news and then disappear. And really the impact of flooding is felt, for years.
That's hard. That's hard to listen to, isn't it, Tim?
And I will add to that that it really longer than that. Like I said, the first really bad flood was 2007, and 2008 topped that one, and that was the record holder until 2018. So, and there's been three or four floods in between there. So some of these communities, like I said, have been devastated over and over, and it doesn't make sense economically to keep doing the same thing over and over. So a lot of efforts are being put into looking at, we either have to move people out of the way, or we have to build this infrastructure in a way and help mitigate, the impacts of these, because everybody out here has come to the realization that it's probably the new normal. A small community like Ontario, for instance, in 19 to 24 businesses either majorly impacted or wiped out. That's three-quarters of the business community in a small town. That's really hard to sustain. And, also people are getting to the point where, there is federal help. The FEMA will come in and help. But there are people, I've had people in some of the flood recovery meetings say, I could get, some assistance from FEMA, but I got it 2 years ago. Let's say 2 years from now, I'm not in the same boat again. Some people have actually walked away from their home because there's no way to stay, and there's no way to make this right. So
and not only homes. A listener, Myrne, he couldn't stay with us, but he called a recall of a time when he experienced the big rains in 2008. Deconstruction of a church in the small town of Wilson began, where he was baptized, the church he was baptized in. He said the second they broke through a wall, it started raining, and it seemed never stop until they were done. He thought it was a shame that they had to tear the church down, a piece of history in the area, and the rain, he thought it seemed to symbolize something, Dina.
Mm-hmm.
It's I tell you what, let's talk about the Driftless Writing Center. It's kind of where this all comes in. What's the role of the Driftless Writing Center? What was their role?
Well, I can speak to that a little bit, and then, you know, Tim works with them and can say more, I'm sure. But, you know, I met the folks from the Driftless Writing Center when they came to Wisconsin Humanities, as Tim noted, looking for some support for a project that originally they had imagined as people coming together for writing workshops to write their stories. But they quickly realized, and in fact that was the project that we funded, but then they came back to us and said, you know what, we've realized that people have a hard time doing that kind of writing. What we really need to do is figure out a way to help people just tell their stories orally. And so we helped them connect with Carolyn Gottschall-Droschke, who I mentioned, an English professor, who then worked with them to develop a way that got her students driving out on weekends, including now during, you know, during the pandemic, her students were, because the project has continued, her students were driving out on weekends to places like Ontario and Lafarge and meeting people who'd been affected by the flood and recording these stories, like the voice, Clinton's voice, who we heard in the beginning of the show. And so, you know, that's how it evolved. But it was, we met, you know, them through the grant, and also because honestly we've, as an organization, been doing work in the Driftless of different kinds for decades.
Yeah. Tim, anything to add there?
Yeah, and I've worked on and off the GFSA for 12, 15 years. And Writing Center actually originally started as a travel writers conference and then evolved and took different forms over the years and revived. And they just got some fantastic programming. And they help regional and, you know, local writers learn how to write, but they also bring in authors. They have open mics. They have craft talks, and this project grew because several of the board members, including my wife, were talking about this idea of using writing to deal with trauma, and some of the stories were collected as writing, you know, mm-hmm. effort, and I remember sitting in Ontario, I think it was Ontario, and an Amish gentleman came in specifically with a yellow notepad full, and he had written a story about the flood and heard about the project, and so it definitely was successful that way, but then it evolved into this oral history project, and Brad Steinmetz is somebody from the Lafarge area that had done a previous oral history project on the Lafarge Dam project, and that, of course, lost funding, and it really divided that community because land had been taken away from residents there to make that dam project happen, and when it didn't happen, there was a lot of animosity in the community, and that was Brad jumped on board with this project early on, and you know, emphasized the importance of helping people deal with those issues in the community, and so as it evolved into an oral history project, you know, it took a little more manpower, and then Caroline with her class came on board. And what's great about that is Caroline's an English professor, you know, and also has, you know, research background, but just came at it from a storytelling approach, which was fantastic. And, what was really rewarding is that capstone event that we held at the Kickapoo Valley Reserve to have people talk about the project. Some of the stories from the students were as compelling or more compelling than the residents that went through flooding, that how it, you know, changed their outlook in their life and in the process of collecting the stories. So it had a huge impact on both sides.
And it seemed like people were open to sharing their, pretty open to sharing their experiences, right?
Yeah, in my experience, over the years doing journalism work, that, you know, it's a delicate balance. That's why we teamed up with, we actually did training with the Project Recovery Group, and a gentleman by the name of Gil Hole had a mental health expertise background. Did some training for the story collectors so that they, you know, did this in the correct way and helped people be comfortable enough to tell their story. It's definitely a powerful way for people to, you know, it has to be done in a way that makes them comfortable. And what's amazing about all these stories is they almost always end with, you know, this was really hard for me, but my neighbor had it even worse. That was just a common, and a lot of stories ended with, you know, that positive outlook of how amazing it was that their community came together and everybody helped each other to rebuild.
I've got another clip here. Let's listen to this clip having to do with water and fear of water.
I would say every job I've ever had has involved water, and I love water and I love recreating on it and studying it. It's so interesting. But yeah, there's also this like giant fear now of water and living next to it. And it's the thing is, it's not the water's fault. Like all the problems we have are man-made. And so you can't be angry at a river for doing what a river has to do.
Oh, man. Talk about the students who helped with these oral histories a little bit more. You mentioned, I think both mentioned perhaps, that their stories were a compelling. What did they learn from the project?
Dina, you
want to
take it?
Sure. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dina.
Oh, yeah, I think, you know, what they've said is that they felt, you know, a kind of connection to people. Again, you know, many of these students, not all but many, are from Wisconsin, but they might not have known this region. For them, you know, the reason they were, you know, so moved and taking these weekends to go out there is, you know, that opportunity to feel connected to people in another part of the state, but as I said, to also see that, you know, as these are young people in their 20s, we know that that's a time when you're teens and 20s, when, you know, you can be really questioning your life and trying to figure out, you know, what your future is going to be. And again, especially now with the pandemic, you know, we know that students have really been struggling with all kinds of, you know, even mental health, you know, real stress and depression. And so for these students to feel like they could see how others in a completely different place and completely different circumstances were nevertheless able to process those experiences and to do that with those people. And as Tim said, to experience the resilience of others, I think has been, you know, from what Carolyn has said, a tremendously moving experience for them.
Tim, how does science and culture come together in these stories, do you think?
Well, I was just thinking about that. There are, as I mentioned, there's a number of scientific studies, and RCS has a large $1.8 million long-term study of both the Coon Creek and the Kickapoo River watershed, and, you know, looking at cost-benefit of having dams or not having dams, those kind of things. And Eric Booth, another professor at UW-Madison, who's done great work. He had six master's students just deliver a presentation, a capstone project, on looking at flood resiliency for the Coon Creek watershed. Really great scientific analysis going on, which has to happen to know, okay, what's going on, and then we can start thinking of solutions. But, you know, what this kind of project does is, you know, my experience covering things as a journalist is that those human interactions with things like this just humanize it, and it's not just numbers on a chart. You know, for when you're going out to talk about a particularly traumatizing experience like this, it really changes the person who's collecting the story. I know when I was doing some filming and live streaming of people in different communities after the flood, there were several experiences that I had where I would be talking to a homeowner or a business owner, and they're literally standing there in, you know, the mud and the filth and trying to clean up. And I remember one business owner in particular just broke down and started to cry because that was the first time they had slowed down to actually think about what had just happened. And I think many students had that same experience that this was the first time they allowed, you know, for some of these people, that they've allowed themselves to think about, you know, exactly, you know, what this did to their life or what it can mean for their life. So you can't collect those stories and not get changed by that.
Well, we have. Do you have, Dina? There is some very compelling episodes here, and I've listened to them, and they're great. Tell people how can people learn more and hear these episodes.
Well, if you're already an avid podcast listener, then you know that you can go to wherever you hear your podcasts and simply subscribe to Human Powered, whether you do that through Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever your preferred method is. For folks who may not yet have dived into this amazing medium, I know fans of Larry's program, I guarantee that knowing that you're a fan of this program, you will be thrilled by the diversity of ideas and voices you can find in podcasts, which are essentially audio programs, kind of like a radio show, except you can download them to your cell phone or listen online. So you can listen to Human Powered also at the Wisconsin Humanities website or the Love Wisconsin website, and also figure out how to subscribe there, again, if that's something you're used to doing or if that's something that's new to you. But I can promise you it's super easy. And there also are some extras, too, on our website if you want to see photos of some of the people and some more really interesting articles and backstory, like some of the information that Tim's been sharing about the Driftless and flooding.
Yeah, you've got a great site there. There's no question about it. And I hope a lot of people sign up for this. Tim, just go back to you for a second. Here it is, spring. Once again, the flood season. I'm just wondering, how are things looking out over there?
Yeah. Well, you know, we keep an eye on that long-range weather service forecast for flooding, and so far this spring it's been pretty good. The snowpack, you know, melted nice and slow. People keep a much closer eye on that these days than they used to, that's for sure. So far, so good. Last year was a really great year, and you know, for communities along the Kickapoo that rely a lot on canoeing. If you've never been to the Kickapoo River to go canoeing, you're missing one of the treasures in the whole country, I think. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And they really rely on that tourism. And, you know, we had several years before last year where the flooding, you know, the water, even if it wasn't major flooding, was so high that it made canoeing really difficult. So it's, so far, so good, and but people have their fingers crossed. And there are people working on long-term solutions here. It's just going to take a little time, and I think there are some solutions out there. I'll mention also, if you're still interested in telling a flood story or you want to comment, WisconsinFloodStories.org is where the project website is, and then DriftlessWritingCenter.org also, if you're interested in that.
Well, it has been a great pleasure to talk with both of you, Dina and Tim. Thank you so much for being with us, and you got a wonderful, wonderful project here. I've heard two. I'm looking forward to the next project. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Dina Wurzel is an executive director of Wisconsin Humanities and executive producer of the Human Powered podcast. Tim Hunt, longtime journalist in Vernon County, also currently serves as a congressional aide to Representative Ron Kind. Take a look. I think you're going to enjoy it. And I think you're going to enjoy hearing from the author of our next segment on the program, Andrew Graff. Andrew's got a new book out. It's called Raft of Stars. Great book, and we'll learn more about it next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.